Welcome to the second season and episode 3 of The Last Team on Turf, a New England Revolution fan podcast.
I'm Eric Warista.
This is Noam Shore.
And you're listening to The Last Team on Turf, a New England Revolution fan podcast. Noam, we have a lot to get to this week. Really exciting stuff. I thought we'd jump right in with some statistics I took a look at.
What have you been looking at?
Well, obviously the Reds are off to a great start this season. And actually, it got me thinking back to the glory days of 2021 when the Reds won the Supporters Shield.
We're already thinking supporter shield?
You know, I'm a big fan of putting the cart in front of the horse here. So let's get to it and just break it down. 2021, the Revs opened with a hard luck tie at Chicago where they actually had a red card and had to play down a man. Then they beat DC United, beat Atlanta, lost to Nashville, tied Philly, beat Colorado, and beat Red Bull New York. That put them at 4-1-2. With 14 points from 7 games. Fast forward to 2023, beat Charlotte, beat Houston, a bad loss at LA, admittedly, beat Nashville, beat DC, tied New York, and then beat Montreal for a 5-1-1 record and 16 points from 7 games. So more points, more wins. And the good news doesn't stop there. They have 4 shutouts in 7 games versus only 2 when they won the Supporter Shield. And they have more goals, 12 versus 10, fewer goals against, 6 versus 7. So better goal difference, more goals, more shutouts, etc. So it's early, yes, but off to an even better start than in the year they won the Supporter Shield.
Wow, that's impressive. Excellent analysis, Eric. So if I attach percentages to that, it seems like we have 100% more shutouts, 20% more goals, and 2 extra points in there. You know, I hadn't thought about that and compared to that certainly epic season, but that is impressive. The Revs have been winning recently and putting the ball in the back of the net.
Right, and what's been nice, I think, is there's been a little bit of a sense of progress. I feel like game to game, the defense has looked a little more solid. The offense seems like it's gelling, and they're kind of flying a little bit under the radar because they weren't expected to do much this year, and they're still only in second in the East and tied for second in the Supporter Shield race, a point back in the Supporter Shield. So my sense of 2021 is that they got out early and held the lead, stayed at the top of the table most of the season. This season, they might fly a little under the radar and there might not be as much pressure on them.
That could be. So here's one other difference with this team and the 2021 team. This team has, I think, more depth, right? It has the new youth movement, and we saw that in the DC game where they started Esmer, Buck, and Jack Peneyatu. And they've had an amazing game, that game. They've trailed off a little in the last couple, and they're getting their feet planted still in the starting lineup, but here you have a team with both senior and kids who are 17, 18 years old who are starting for the team and making a meaningful impact. So the Revolution are not only winning games, but they're also building a team for the future at the same time.
Yeah, it's been exciting to watch these young players come in and contribute right away. And it's heartening as a fan, too, because it's not something Bruce Arena is known for. He's known for sticking with veterans through thick and thin, and I think he's done that with this team too, but he's also given these young players the chance to flourish and shine and show what they can do. And Noah Bucks logged a lot of minutes, looked very good, made a lot of big contributions. And the other players you mentioned as well have been have looked very comfortable stepping into the first team, you know, regular season lineup. They don't need to wait for Open Cup games and oddball exhibitions to get minutes.
Right. Yeah, and it brings a lot of different options, and depending on the team that they're playing, the Revs can put out a different kind of look. And there's always injuries that happen through the season, and, you know, this next person up, and really everyone has played on the team except for those a couple players who are still injured. So there's definitely something exciting there. I think the last few games have also been interesting, that while the Revolution have been winning, aside from the tie with New York, although they should have probably won that game with a disallowed goal that was a little unfortunate.
Right.
I think there's also been some interesting ups and downs with some of the players too. Like, you had the youth movement in DC really shown with just amazing play all around the field, fantastic touches on the ball. And then, you know, with the Arena going to a more seasoned lineup in the last game against Montreal, and really showing class as well on the field and just dominating that game. But still, a lot of promise, as we talked about. You had up and down games with Bo and Rero, but both who came through with really beautiful goals. Bo against DC, Barrero against Montreal with a curling, just cracker of a shot into the top right corner. So I like that the players that are both struggling and also succeeding in a great way at the same time and working their way through the games, overcoming the challenges, and not giving up and making huge impacts along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. And the balance that you mentioned earlier has been really impressive. You know, I just jotted down Barrero, Bo, Bobby Wood, Carlos Heel, obviously, Noel Buck, and Latif Blessing, all looking really solid and strong on the field. And then even Giacomo Veroni, who had a tough time getting going, maybe partly because he was only playing, you know, 5-7 minutes a game, and we would sit there and watch, and that would be one of the topics that we would mention to each other, just how is this guy going to get it going if he's only playing 7 minutes a match. It's hard to get into any kind of rhythm and feel like part of the team. But then he came out in the Montreal game, got a little bit more in the way of minutes, admittedly against a weak opponent, and buried a great goal. So that was exciting to see. Maybe that'll get the ball rolling for him as well.
Right. Yeah. Had the same feeling. And what a great goal that was. Also a fantastic assist from Petrovic, from the goalie, a perfect ball out to Rioni, who really handled it perfectly off his chest, turning at the same time, and just dribbles down the whole field and strikes a beautiful shot. It was a great goal. Even though the game was already 3-0, you could see how much that goal meant to him and to his teammates, and everyone was excited about it. It was really exciting to see.
Right, and the first goalkeeper assist by a Rev since Matt Reese 12 years ago against Kansas City in July 2011, which of course we all remember that. Do you remember that goal, Noam? I don't remember it either. But the internet assures me that it happened, so I'll put my faith in that.
And no offense to Matt Reese, legend. I'll chalk it up to maybe just not having seen that game. But I certainly feel like I'm not going to forget this one. So definitely something to remember. There was an interesting tweet also where, and one always has to be suspect of tweets that you see. There's certainly a negative vibe there, but it seemed, even for the limited time that Veroni was on the field, he wasn't getting the right kind of service from other players on the team. He's somebody kind of like Buxa who needs the crosses to come in. It took Buxa a long time to get going with the Revolution too, and became an amazing striker for the Revolution. But Veroni wasn't really getting the balls that he needed to do that either, you know, in the air or on the ground. It is interesting that the so-called cross that he got was a, you know, half-field pass from Petrovic to get that going. But I think, like I mentioned, everyone seemed, you know, especially happy for him in scoring that goal. And I think it's just a matter of really trying to figure out the system with him in the middle there.
Right. So, yeah, you know, I mean, one thing that kind of gets interesting with all the depth is, what do you do with the guys? There are two. You mentioned earlier, there's two players who haven't played yet. Nacho Heel and Tommy McNamara are those players. They're both injured. Max expected back a little sooner, I think. Or maybe I have that backwards. But they're both expected back within a month, let's say, maybe a little sooner. So how do you blend those players into this lineup, especially Tommy McNamara, who has, over the last two seasons, has started 51 of the Revs' 65 regular season games, including 30 of 33 last year. And it's not clear. Yeah. It's not clear that you'd take anyone off who's out there now. So to your point about the depth being better, it really creates some challenges.
Right. Well, and especially here's where I think there's could be an additional challenge for Bruce Arena. He strikes me as somebody who is still sort of framed around the three sub rule. And now it's, of course, five. But often you feel like, especially if the team is challenged, like bring on Boateng and bring on a couple subs to spark the team. And he'll wait 60, 65, 70 minutes before bringing on some other people. And, I do wonder if there's something to be said here, given the team that the Revs have, of being more aggressive with substitutions to bring out those fresh legs and a more aggressive style of play for 90 minutes.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think that sometimes it seems like he's keeping the subs in his pocket maybe a little too long. It feels like they rarely make the first sub. That's a good one for an ambitious statistician to go take a look at. How often do the Revs make the first substitution? And then you could look at it when they're winning versus when they're losing and then compare it to the league average. So if there's a grad student out there that's bored and looking to do some MLS number crunching, reach out to us.
Actually, the issue of substitutions with the five sub rule would be interesting to look at league-wide. Is it often used to the maximum, or do most managers go with two or three subs as used to be, given the limitations back then?
Right.
Or is there something to be said for the five subs coming in and providing that extra spark?
I think they use all five most of the time, but maybe three of them are after the 80 or 85th minute. It feels like a lot of them are late, and there's very little where the Revs go to someone right at the 60th minute. It's usually, as late as maybe the 65th minute. So that'd be interesting to look at, just to see if that pattern is reflected in the data the way it's reflected in our perception from watching the games.
So there was one other highlight from the Montreal game that I think is worth talking about. And
yeah, let's hear
it. It's not a blast back to 2021, but going back further, Latif Blessing was back on the field. And he was everywhere on the pitch. Tackling, passing, breaking up plays on defense, getting things going on offense, and keeping the ball forward. I love how he seems like to not like to pass the ball backwards and keeps things going forward. And you know what he reminds me of a legendary Revs player.
Who's that?
Shalry Joseph, who just had a command in the middle of the field all the time. And it's interesting because Shalry Joseph was much taller and bigger presence. And Latif Blessing is different in style, but to me has a similar kind of impact on the game.
Right. He's a nice compliment to Carlos Heel and someone who knows where the ball needs to go. And that's interesting. Yeah, Shalry Joseph was more of a destroyer, but also good with the ball. And Jermaine Jones may be another name.
Right.
For the Revs that has some passing, more than passing familiarity with Latif Blessing. And this is looking like a very good pickup. I mean, he's someone who started most of the time for LAFC for most of the last 5 years and has come in and made a difference right away. And I'm just looking at this. This is a very stat-centric episode, but through the first four games that he's played, he's completed 85.2% of his passes, which would be a career high for his career. They actually don't have the career number on MLSsoccer.com, but it looks like his best season before this was 85.0. And so he's outpacing that so far.
That's very interesting.
Small sample size, but yeah.
Well, so I think that's significant. And I think that could be one reason why we see the Revs with even a better record than they had at the start of 2021. And another observation I've had, despite some of the ups and downs of some individual players at times, but is also a kind of consistency with the team that when they come onto the field, they look professional. They control the ball really well. They move it around the pitch. They look like they know what they're doing. And Blessing and others, I think, are contributing to that. But I think with Heal and Blessing on the field at the same time, I think that is a new dimension that wasn't there in 2021. And now that you mentioned his statistics, it does make me wonder about the potential of that pairing through the season along with the other players and what that could mean. The Revs might only get better if you think about it.
Yeah, I think they can only get better from here. And you're starting to see that game by game. And also at the individual level, you know, guys look more comfortable. And I agree with what you said. I mean, there's a plan, and they're able to execute the plan, or they have been so far.
Right.
And that... maybe that's a big difference from 2021, where there was a plan. They were very organized and kept the ball most of the time in 2021. But maybe the knock on the 2021 season, besides the not winning the MLS Cup, was that they had a lot of one goal wins. So I think in the NFL, one of the ways they look at luck is they look at what percent of fumbles did your team recover, because of fumble recoveries are basically a random outcome. And if you had an abnormally good season, but you recovered an abnormally high number of fumbles, that might suggest that you were just lucky. And the Revs had an abnormally high number of one-goal wins in 2021, which I think the soccer stat heads chalked up more to luck. And maybe that, you know, I still think that was a really good team, and the playoff loss was maybe more unlucky than anything else, or they just came out a little flat against New York. But this team does feel better than it is lucky. And I think the New York City tie showed that, because that's a game they felt like they should have won, as you said.
Right. Yeah, and maybe exactly. And maybe the challenges that they've had at individual moments of games, they're overcoming, and they're not deciding the game outcome, and that luck factor. They're still winning despite having some issues there at times, especially in the end of games, too. It's been a little bit dicey controlling the ball in the last 10, 15 minutes, but I think they'll get a handle on that soon.
Right.
So some other ups and downs. Our long-standing theme of the T-shirt at Gillette Stadium. So it wasn't there for NYFC.
Right.
And they had these new pillars of fire, which I don't remember seeing before. I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, they had the towers that shoot fire into the sky. Yeah.
But I didn't go to the last game, but you reported back, Eric, some difficult news on that front.
Yeah, sorry to share tough news, but the partially inflated giant T-shirt is back behind the goal. I don't know why they brought it back. I don't know why it went away. Maybe there was a construction clearance issue they had. But unfortunately, that is back. We thought maybe our long, persistent campaign to get rid of it here on our widely distributed podcast was effective. And it turns out that maybe there was something else at play. But we will keep at it.
Right. Yeah. I thought we had made a difference, but alas, we still have work to do.
I do want to mention a couple other in stadium things that are going on that were, I thought, really positive and really good. So at the New York City game at halftime, they had amputee soccer. They had a team from New York play a team from New England. England won 2-0. But I just want to mention that that game was absolutely phenomenal. I sat there and watched it. I didn't go for our usual walk around the stadium at halftime. And those players were terrific. I mean, you know, moving around on crutches and one leg, and the goalkeepers only had one hand. Just amazing to watch and a lot of fun. And then at the subsequent game, the Montreal game, they brought back, yes, they brought back the inflatable shirt, but they also brought back the inflatable bubble soccer, where you're standing, you know, in one of those inflatable balls and bouncing off people and trying to score goals. And I always liked that. I was always a fan of that. I thought that looked like a lot of fun, and the contestants would really get into it and really smash each other, and people go flying onto the turf and spin upside down. So I was happy to see that back.
Yeah, I was a big fan of the bubble soccer too, so that's good to see that back. And unfortunately, I did miss the amputee soccer game, but it sounds awesome and it sounds amazing, and it's great to bring that directly to fans that they can see it as part of the Revolution game experience. So,
right,
that's exciting to hear.
The only downside to the bubble soccer being back is that maybe that's why the t-shirt's back. Maybe they had the air compressor out and they're like, well, as long as we're inflating these bubbles, let's blow up the t-shirt again.
Bring the t-shirt back.
Yeah. So hopefully that wasn't the case, but you know, maybe they got a deal on air. I don't know.
Right. Well, you know, those pillars of fire now, they do have to be careful about the t-shirt, but it looks like there's enough space in the lighthouse area of the stadium. And it's also perhaps worth pointing out that the size of the lighthouse of the new stadium and there is it's impressive. It's like a skyscraper towering over the stadium now, not just a little decorative element like it was before.
Right.
And it wasn't even like little.
4 to 5 times the size of the previous one, would you say?
Yeah, something like that. I mean, it goes all the way from the bottom, all like above the stadium now. So it's interesting. I'm curious to see when this is all done, what the in-game experience will be like. We've talked about that, and something that I know the Revs are working on, so looking forward to that.
Right. And a busy schedule will continue here in April. So a lot to look forward to. The Revs travel to Columbus and then back home for a game against Kansas City, last place in the West, and then Cincinnati, first place in the East, and the only team ahead of the Revs in the standings in any way. So a lot to look forward to.
Big games. Big games. Absolutely. Looking forward to it. Well, that's the episode for this week. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll be back soon.